Welcome to Gen X episode.
Technological, pedagogical content knowledge. Yeah. I'm Mark Hofer from the College of William and Mary, joined by...
This is Steve Whitaker at the University of Virginia.
And Michael Kelly, also from the University of Virginia.
I hope that the... that dramatic intro didn't throw you guys off your game a little bit this morning.
A little. I'm reeling from it. It was intense.
Well, I feel like this is, going to be an intense show, so I wanted to start it off right. You know what I'm saying?
You did.
Yeah, get the ball rolling.
Get a job doing, movie voiceovers or something.
Yeah, well,
In a something. World where no one is safe.
That's actually my only talent in life, is I'm pretty good at picking out, those voices, in commercials or whatever,
really?
Identifying who's speaking. No, that's probably my only talent.
And thumb wrestling.
And thumb wrestling. Thank you, Steve. I am undefeated. Good point. Thanks for bringing that in.
Always got your back.
Yeah. All right. So with that, with the witty banter, check. Today we were talking about different topics and things like that. Something came to my mind that's maybe a little more theoretical than we typically do, but I thought it might be interesting to talk about this sort of new framework for thinking about technology integration called TPCK, or Technological Pedagogical Content Knowledge. But sort of taking the theory and kind of laying it out a little bit, but then also talking about how it connects to generative technologies and how we think we can help facilitate this in classrooms, whether they be K-12 or higher ed, and we'll just get the ball rolling from there.
Yeah, and I just to jump in, it may be useful for anybody who's listening to this to jump on over to the website right now to take a look at the diagram, just so that you've got a visual in mind while we're going through some of this. Just because for me that four word term is enough to sort of make your head spin.
Yeah, definitely. A little visual is good.
Yep.
Oh, the website. Where's the website, Steve?
Oh, thanks for asking that, Michael.
Glad you asked.
Thank you. In a world where the website is gentech.stevewhitaker.net.
Very good. Well, we got started with this. We talk about this all the time on the show and just sort of amongst each other, that technology integration for any teacher is really – it's a lot more complicated than – simply learning how to use a tool and then having at it. I think that's been the assumption for a long time that, well, if we provide good professional development, on how to use PowerPoint or create websites or whatever, then, the integration happens magically. And I think we've all known for a long time that that's not really the case. But it's only been more recently that there's been sort of a theoretical framework developed that sort of helps explain that. And it's kind of, I think the genius in any sort of theoretical notion is that it's very obvious.
Exactly.
once you see it, but it took somebody to sort of lay it out and make it clear. And I think it's somewhat useful. So the basic idea is that, that in order to integrate technology effectively in teaching, it requires a lot of different kinds of knowledge on the part of the teacher. Mm-hmm. If you're teaching about, biomes or something in science, you've of course got to know that content.
Yes. Everyone knows biomes.
Which is the big C. What's that, Steve-O?
Biomes.
Yeah, well, I just pulled that out of thin air.
That's funny you should say that, because this instructor I'm working with up here at CMU, we were just chatting, and he just off the top of his head, he said a sample question is, what is your favorite biome?
I'm going to use that in my class.
Biomes these days? Has it been on Discovery Channel or something recently? And it's like,
I don't know. Something in the water, maybe. It's good stuff. Okay. So anyway, you got to know about biomes if that's what you're going to teach.
Sure.
You got to know that content. But as we all know, teaching about biomes is something that is not, you have to know sort of the tricks about how to approach it in terms of teaching. So what strategies might work effectively? What are some common misunderstandings by students about biomes and other things like that? And of course, if you're going to integrate technology, you have to understand how to work whatever technology it is that you're using. But now comes into play the nifty Venn diagram that Steve talked about on the website, is that it's not just enough to think about integrating technology effectively to have that knowledge in each of those three distinct areas, but also how they overlap.
Right.
So, for example, if there's lots of terminology that's important to learn, what are some strategies that help kids learn terminology? So it's not necessarily just about the content, but it's about how you – how pedagogy fits into that, specifically.
Right.
I'm sorry, Steve, go ahead.
No, it's all right, Mark. Go ahead.
I was just going to say just a couple other quick examples. And then the idea of, you know, part of, you know, visuals would be really important, I think, in teaching this. And maybe there's still images or maybe short video clips or animations or things like that. So that's where the intersection between content and technology comes into play. So how can the content help you relate that, or how can the technology help you relate the content to your learners? And then, of course, there's the intersection between all three is how do you, you know, sort of figure out connections between learning specific content skills with the strategies and how the technology all play into it. And then you have technology integration nirvana, that central intersection between all three domains of knowledge. So
namaste, whew, my brothers.
I'm winded after that.
A great way to introduce it. And I think a couple of thoughts along the way is that, like you said, Mark, the genius of this is that it's pretty much common sense and obvious once you see it. But it really, for me, it illustrates how it seems to me that most of the time when we're focusing on bringing technology into the classroom, at least for me, I've got sort of a blinder where I'm only looking at any two of these at the same time.
Right.
And I think often when we come to the school from the technology point of view, we're thinking about either technology and content, in other words, technology and the stuff that needs to be gotten across, or maybe technology and how to teach with technology, but it's those sort of grayish, multicolored areas that get lost in it. And so we bring PowerPoint into the classroom thinking that PowerPoint is a great way to show an entire room how tundra looks, if we're going to go with this biome thing.
Yeah.
But then what? I mean, that has nothing to do with really appropriate uses of it. It has nothing to do with the content beyond this visual, and it has nothing to do with the best way to teach it.
I'll just take that one step further quickly, and I'd argue that I think as educational technology people or instructional technology people, we probably tend to focus on the pedagogy and technology connections.
Absolutely.
More than the content, because of course the content, it varies so widely. I'd be hard pressed to define, even though I just brought it up, I'd be hard pressed to define what a biome is. You can't have all the content knowledge in all of the different content areas with teachers or students that you'd be working with, but you can sort of have a good understanding of different pedagogical strategies, learning theory, and things like that. So I think we would probably tend to focus on that PT intersection, pedagogy and technology. And so, you know, then of course you're limited because you're missing opportunities with different content areas and so on and so forth.
And I think, like you said, if we do consider the content, it's in a sort of transient way because we think it's either content that's not alterable or content that we're not familiar with. And in truth, you know, given some reading that if you do a little bit of reading about the TCK concept, it's not just unidirectional. It's not just that, you know, the content needs to fit into the technology. It's really how those two work together and arrows that go in both ways. So there might be a good technology to teach a specific kind of content, but at the same time, part of that pedagogical knowledge is knowing how to rearrange the content or order it or chunk it or group it so that you can use the technology better too. So it's complicated, and I think if anything, the first pass at this may be a little discouraging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at this and you look at those intersections and you think this is just so, considering all of the directions of the arrows between or among all of these different pieces of that diagram, it looks a little bit overwhelming.
And I think particularly because it requires teachers or the technology integration specialists to be looking at this a bigger process. A set of interactions that is dynamic and that changes, and it can change, you know, within different domains of the same science class. And so I think there's a certain amount of reflectivity and understanding of what's really going on and what needs to happen. And how different components actually influence the process and the outcome that I think a lot of folks aren't accustomed to doing. And I think part of that's because there is this third, window there that because most folks tend to be going back and forth between two, we're introducing a third one yet. And then, you know, they're trying to look at how one influences the other, and I think it's like you both said in the beginning, it makes common sense. But by the same token, I think we haven't been thinking about it in practice like this so much that it's actually more complex.
Right. And I guess it comes down to pockets of expertise, too. You know, each person comes to the table with, I guess, his own colored crystal. But, you know, just to sort of back up and start from the beginning, where do you think most teachers fall on that diagram when they're first starting their teaching?
C is less than greater than P. C is less than and greater than P.
Michael's referring to a very cryptic note he made on our show notes that Mark and I interpreted as some kind of machine language.
Solid. We found it very threatening.
I called the police when I saw that thing.
So what do you mean by that? Cryptic.
Oh, I think that most teachers fall into the content of the pedagogy. somewhere in between there.
Well, and it makes, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense if you think about teacher training programs. The focus is really, I would say, even maybe more heavily on the pedagogical part of things. Sometimes right. there's the assumption that the content knowledge comes from the undergraduate major. And I think a lot of the focus of pre-service training is the pedagogical side of things from
right.
You know, child development to behavior management to those kinds of things. So,
But then as soon as they hit the classroom, though, after the first couple of years, boom, now they have their ordained content, you know.
Right. But even so, I mean, I think the idea is that, at least in this way of thinking about things, that content is not static. It does change.
Right.
It's reordered on different levels, but... So, Mark, I mean, what is it about this that appeals to you that kind of brought it onto your radar?
I think just sort of, again, go back to what I said at the beginning. It's like we all knew that this was challenging, but it's hard sometimes to put your finger on why.
Right.
And just as a quick example, I'd worked a few years ago with a teacher on a digital movie project, and it was real obvious that as we got into this and she was typically more of a teacher-directed instructional person. You know, she even described herself as sort of the hub of the classroom, that everything – that she was sort of instrumental in – you know, you understand. You understand
the image,
I think. Well, that kind of project, though, shifted the focus, at least the way we designed it, so that the students really were very self-directed, and she was more of in a facilitation role, and she was incredibly uncomfortable with that. And so, you know, if you follow this diagram that, you know, she knew the content knowledge, she was fine with the technology skills, but the pedagogical part of it was so far out of her comfort zone that even though the kids did a good job with the project, sort of as an objective viewpoint,
right.
she just felt like it was a nightmare. And so, you know, but that was pretty obvious. I mean, you know, it didn't take a brain surgeon to figure that out, right? But more recently, I've worked on a project with a different teacher who employs a student project all the time and is very comfortable with that facilitation role, had probably even a stronger content background and probably more comfort level with the technology, but we still ran into problems. And what we realized is, I think what was helpful about this framework for me is to think about where she had problems was where all three intersected.
Right.
She didn't have trouble thinking about how to teach kids to use the technology. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of strategy she didn't have trouble with, you know, using digital archives and things like that that helped kids access the content. It was in the phase where they were actually kind of building their movie, where all three sort of were intersecting and it was kind of an iterative process. You know, they were focused on the content and then they switched over to the technology and they were sort of having to make these switches sort of on the fly in their brain. That was the part that she had a harder time facilitating. So it helps, I think, you tease out where the problems are, where the challenges are.
So, I mean, actually, Mark, I hadn't really thought about this, but I think that's an interesting way to look at this. You're saying is this is almost beyond just a conceptual framework. This is almost a metric that you can use to kind of assess where you are, to assess where you need to go.
Yeah. In fact, I'd take it one step further even. I'd say it's a good way to assess kind of where you are. The trick is it's sort of with a particular project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have global TPCK.
No.
You know, but I think a lot of people assume that. It's like, well, this person is strong in TPCK or not.
But really, it depends on what you're doing.
This guy, you know, CT Fu is strong.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's how – isn't that – that's how Mishra and Kohler, that they presented as a
– right.
Very much as an analytical framework for research as well as practice.
Right. What I think, though, Michael, is I even think it's useful in terms of guiding professional development. Mm-hmm. Because I think when you're planning professional development experiences, you need to be at least mindful of these different areas, if not plan for them.
I mean, I think you could even take it beyond that and not just use it as someone planning the development, but bring this into the professional development venue and allow teachers to do some kind of self-assessment even on a, you know, on a particular level.
Yeah, I think that'd be really interesting. I don't know that there are any of those kind of instruments out there at this point.
I don't think there are. And I think, in fact, you know, one of the biggest problems may be the idea of measurement. But just even just for this example that you gave, Mark, it sounds like it wasn't all that difficult for you and the teacher to take a look at these ideas and just think through the kinds of things that were happening in the classroom and assign them somewhere on the diagram. Now, maybe if you're looking at this as some kind of instrument, you know, like the class, Michael, that we use at Castle, that's a lot more difficult and maybe not even appropriate for something like this. But as a framework and as a way to sort of peg a given project, I think it's incredibly useful.
Yeah, I think it's really it's very much in its conceptual stages. And Mishra and Kohler have done it. They've sort of developed this out of like a design team approach for higher education. Mm-hmm. Where they're working with content experts and technology folks and, you know, folks from the School of Ed and things like on these really elaborate sort of instructional design projects.
Right.
Which, of course, we all know that doesn't really translate necessarily to K-12 classrooms,
right.
You know, where you're really one person is doing the planning, you know, the classroom teacher. So I think there's some work to be done in translating sort of this theoretical notion to how it plays out in classrooms and how we could incorporate in professional development, things like that. But I think it really is a useful starting place. It's intimidating.
It is.
I think. But at the same time, if you really, you know, this explains a lot why a lot of professional development programs aren't very effective, why a lot of teachers don't regularly incorporate technology in their teaching and, you know, and so on. It really, I think it explains a lot of what we see in schools all the time.
I wonder too, as this is refined and as this maybe is used as some kind of system to think about professional development and growth in these three areas, what are the obstacles to a teacher whose goal is to find herself in the middle of this diagram, but who really knows that, you know, she's currently somewhere between that P and the C? Like what? So that knowledge is one thing. And then, you know, what are the steps after that? What are the obstacles to sort of getting to the middle of this?
Well, I guess I'd argue that, first of all, the T needs to fit in with the P and the C.
Right.
So, for example, this first teacher I talked about with the digital movie project, if she's sort of a more teacher-directed approach to teaching and learning, you need to find technologies that connect with that approach rather than saying, well, you need to change your whole teaching practice to accommodate this technology.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to work the other way. What kind of technology fits into that kind of teaching with that kind of content? Does that make any sense?
It totally does. I think that's that sort of philosophy we've always sort of talked about, which is the direction needs to go from, we've always said from the teaching to the technology, but I guess in this diagram it needs to go from the PC combo downwards to the T.
Yeah, it does make sense, but what happens when, like say the case of that first teacher, Mark, if because the teachers, that's their comfort zone or their style is this teacher-directed approach, that didn't work with your project or what you assumed with the nature of the work and the research was not how to deal with this content or this approach. In other words, I'm wondering because so often take the position that. That oftentimes teacher directed is too dominant. I mean, we need to lighten up with that. There needs to be more student directed kind of work. And so, if I'm dealing with a teacher or a situation that's just over the top teacher dominant, why wouldn't I want to change that?
Well, I don't think that's you necessarily.
Not me, as in trying to change this person, but I'm just sort of more, you know, hypothetically, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think.
Well, first of all, Michael, I agree with your notion. I mean, I agree that I think, you know, some certain schools, particularly, you know, grade levels and so on, you know, tend to be too teacher directed. And I know that, you know, a lot of learning research shows that that's not necessarily the best way to go. But at the same time, we've seen years, you know, starting with sort of Apple Classrooms of Tomorrow and even going back to the Lego Logo movement. Uh-huh. It's like that was really about teaching reform more than it was about the technology. Right. And we don't see any lasting change.
Uh-huh.
And so I think it takes – and, you know, and it's logical because it's like teachers form their beliefs about teaching and learning, uh-huh, and they can become cemented just like any, beliefs that you have. Right. And so I think it's more – sorry, I'm taking a long time to say this. I think what we need to do is work towards incremental change.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because, maybe PowerPoint can be the Trojan horse, to get teacher comfortable rather than, Glenn Bull's inoculation theory. You know, mm-hmm, they have a first bad experience, they're done with it.
Right. That's a point well taken, Mark. And I think why, we didn't see any effect in part is because, what we're talking about, changing sort of the way teachers are looking at things and approaching teaching and learning is one thing, but it's there's still the whole system of the institution in the context that it's in, and if that's not changing along with it, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, your square peg can kind of get rounded corners for a while, but if the whole framework is still set up for square pegs, it ain't going to change.
That's a very good point. And actually, the Miescher and Kaler, the diagram that we had, the Venn diagram on the website, I've seen different versions of it, and one of the versions has sort of a little cloud behind it that's context.
Oh, really?
Right.
That you do also need to consider context as well as these things, which of course adds a huge layer of complexity to thinking about this as well. So I think that's a point really well taken.
You know, in thinking about this again, the conversation always tends to drift a little more towards the theoretical as we're doing this, and I think that's just sort of part of the world. But I'm kind of wondering about a teacher who's maybe listened this far, who is buying into this concept that maybe you can look at this framework as something that'll help you figure out where you are maybe on a given project, where you need to go. And then that teacher decides to walk down the hall to the IT support personnel, the media specialist, somebody in his or her building that's there to kind of help. And I'm wondering where do you think the IT people are coming from? Where might they be on this diagram? And, and I'm looking at this as a question that you sort of brought up, Michael. And, what responsibility do they have in getting out of that T? How far out of the T do they need to go?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, how does this play out in the real world when a teacher's ready to make a step, knows that there is somebody there who can support her or him? What happens?
That's a good question.
That's Michael's question. I can't take the credit for it.
Michael, that's a good
question.
Does
that mean I have to answer it?
Exactly.
You're off the hook, actually. And I asked it, so that leaves Hofer. I'll even start, just in fairness. I mean, I think obviously that people trained in technology have a vested interest in seeing that T come to fruition, and at least – speaking for myself, it's hard not to think about the tools first sometimes, as exciting as some of them are now.
Sure.
So, I mean, I think that's a beginning point. And if you were to draw a direction between that T and either the C or the P, I'm wondering where you think most technology support personnel might lean, are they going to lean more towards the content, more towards the pedagogy, or are they really pretty well balanced? Do they recognize those two?
I'm thinking more towards the P.
Yeah, that would be my sort of guess too. Although it depends on where that tech support person started out. Because I think more and more we're starting to see those people being pulled from classroom teaching positions.
Right. And that's why I think when I made a note there that depending on the experience or the domain of that person, they could very quickly find themselves right in the middle. Because, for example, you guys are coming from a strong background in social studies, let's say, or like Mark said, coming right out of the classroom, they have a content area, they have pedagogy, and now they're working on the technology. Myself, for example, with my background in ESL, if I'm dealing with an ESL content you know, ideally, or, it, you know, you could see how I might quickly fall into that middle or zone. I'm sort of trying to be modest. But, you know, but that it's because of, you know, the training of IT people, like, you know, they're starting out with the T and the P, and then if they, depending on their background, you know, they could very well have a strong content.
Yeah, and I suppose the question's not really fair. It paints everybody in broad brush strokes to ask that question, but maybe a better way to think about it is, given that, I mean, I'd be willing to say that most people probably are not solidly in the middle. If they were, this wouldn't be an issue.
Right.
So given that they're probably not, given that most people that work with technology are probably at least a little bit more in that pink circle, I'm wondering about what that marriage looks like between a teacher who may be more between the C and the P and the technology mm-hmm. person who's not. I mean, really, this is just reframing a question we've asked for a long time. And just to throw the last thought out before I forget it, you guys both said that the pedagogical might be a little bit more on the forefront. But for some reason or another, I'm tempted to say that coming at the problem with technology, I'd almost think that the content is more an obvious focus to somebody than how to teach the content and how to teach the content with technology.
So the science, the teacher comes down to the IT room, and then so he's going to have,
and
okay,
what's
I got
the first question you're going to ask. If you're,
what do you teach?
What do you need to teach? You know,
right. Well, you know, I think that's where the point is, this, Steve. Maybe, and this is maybe the way to get started is thinking about first just listening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. And what did you they say? Can listen for they can listen for things like you know, like what is the content topic. So then in their mind they're thinking, okay, I remember this archive, or I remember this, you know, simulation or whatever. But then they're still listening and they're thinking, okay, and you want to do it as a whole class activity.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay, so then that sort of narrows the options. Almost like it'd be interesting to see if there was like a sort of a decision tree you could develop.
Well, you know,
for IT folks, you know, where I think it's really important to kind of listen to what it is, the way they want to approach it, what they have, the way they want to approach it, what they typically do, you know, and so on. And then that helps you sort of guide your suggestions or your, you know, your questions or whatnot.
You know, I mean, I think sometimes we think about that relationship between the teacher and the support structure or support personnel as, you know, one of them kicking the other in the booty. but instead, you know, what you're sort of talking about is using this as a guide where maybe the technology support person comes in with a little better knowledge of the tools that are out there and the archive. I'm not just the tools, but the resources that are out there, the digital libraries. The teacher comes in and is able to explain the content that needs to get across. And then once they're sort of in that CT intersection, they work together to get the rest of the way.
Pull the P in.
Towards the P. It's not just P about the content. It's P about the tool or the technology or the resource.
That's an important part because that's – and I think that's that where that level of complexity comes in, because there's – those are can be two different things, obviously.
Right.
The pedagogy, you know, as it crosses the content and the technology yeah, it's a balancing act.
Yeah, I agree.
So how important, I mean, and this is the next question that I think I put in here. How important is it really to be in the middle each time? Is that the goal? Should it be the goal?
You know, I think, you know, if, you know, in a perfect world, yeah, I think that's what you'd see. But, you know, I'm not so sure it's bad to sort of shift in and out of focus. Just for example, you know, we do this all the time in teaching anyway. There are certain days, certain topics that are real content heavy.
Right.
And it may be that you're lecturing or you're, you know, the students are doing independent work where they're reading and answering questions or whatever. And then there's another day that's more maybe applied where you're doing a simulation in class or you're, you know, you're having a debate or something like that. You know, so I think just naturally in our teaching, we tend to focus on one domain or another, just depending on what your purpose is, what it is you're trying to do. So I don't think it's really, first of all, unrealistic at all, but even maybe inappropriate to think about, well, this, you know, is really going to be a little bit more technology heavy.
Right.
Because the kids are learning how to do this, and later we're going to apply it, you know, different times down the road and so on. So, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily inappropriate for it to be like that. I think it's just reality.
Right.
Does that answer your question? I don't know if
it does answer. I mean, typically, if I hear a question that says, is it always best to be in the middle, the answer is going to be no. But, I mean, I think in this case, you're right, the ideal is to be there. I think that's the whole point of this, is this really solid blend of what needs to be taught, the tool that you can use to teach it, and how to use both of those things in unison. I mean, I think that's the goal here. Mm-hmm. At the same time, like you said, not only is it not realistic, but sometimes students don't benefit from that. Sometimes they need that balance to be offset, to make up for something, to teach them something, to spend more time on the tool if it's something new, for example.
Right.
And I think that the danger in always shooting through the middle isn't that you wouldn't do a good job. It's that you might feel bad if you don't get there without recognizing that you didn't need to be, or missing out that you really should have spent a little more time this time on the tool so that it didn't get in the way down the road of the C or the P or the C.
Yeah, it's maybe you think of it more in the long run rather than on that particular day or even that particular project or unit or whatever. Maybe you think about it sort of – and that's really – it's something interesting. One of the folks here at William & Mary and the Gifted Ed program, they're doing a technology-related project. And she asked if there's sort of a scope and sequence for technology skills for kids. And I thought, you know, not that I'm aware of, you know, I mean, other than like the ISTENET standards, you know, where they have profiles for the kids at different grade levels and so on. But it occurred to me, you know, it's like you almost wonder if ramping up to doing something big requires some type of technology scope and sequence.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, and that might be a way to think about this, just as you were talking about, Steve, that at some point you're emphasizing the content, at some point you're emphasizing the technology, but in the grand scheme of things, your end goal is to sort of be at the center of this this diagram. I don't know, just something to think about, I guess.
I think that's probably a really good way to try to frame where the ideal direction would be. You know, at the same time, I think all of us heard technology scope and sequence and probably thought, yeah.
Right.
Good luck.
Luck with that, exactly. Next week it will change.
Right. But point being, I mean, a diagram like this, used well, may at least open eyes to the possibility that there is that need at some level. I think for us as instructional technologists, maybe this opens our eyes a little bit more to the other two things on the. Although, you know, Mark, especially with your teaching background, I'm guessing you were well aware of this very much from the beginning. But I think there are an awful lot of people who would look at something like this and start to recognize, because this is tangible and visible, that this is complicated and that the technology does play a very large role, and it's not always just an add-on.
Right. Yep. It's not just adding a computer to the classroom.
It's not. That's right. It's not. And, you know, after Al Gore invented the internet and we put a computer in every classroom, what's next? And I think now access to the tool is key. You know, and Mark, if you think about Adam's dissertation, that's not something to be scoffed at. And that's actually not even reflected here so much. This assumes, I suppose, access and ability. But so it is that context cloud behind it that might be most important. But I don't know. This just clicked with me. Michael, it's like we talk about software sometimes. You just fire it up and it clicks and it works and you know it makes sense.
Yep.
Well, I think this is a starting point, you know, rather than an end point. You know, I don't know if we have any grand conclusions, but I think it does help us put our finger on why this is so challenging sometimes.
Right.
And I honestly think that maybe the biggest long-term benefit of this for practicing teachers and for professional development folks and so on is just – and even for people like us who work with pre-service teachers is the idea that when we're teaching teachers how to, or not teaching teachers, but working with teachers on developing ways to integrate technology, that we really need to be mindful of these kinds of things. And we need to incorporate this sort of bigger picture philosophy in the way we do professional development.
Absolutely.
That, you know, it's not just about the tools, and it's not even just about showing them a bunch of great websites.
Right.
You know, that it is more, more complicated than that.
Yeah. I really like that point, Mark, you made early on about the professional development. And using this diagram and just the whole framework as a as something for new teachers to reflect on and to sort of use as a lens to in their practice, that seems really helpful.
So looking ahead, I mean, at least for me, I think this is going to be a nice way. It's going to be a nice lens or filter to look through as we're talking about some of these issues that we've brought up and we'll bring up in the future. Speaking of which, our next show is going to feature Eddie Pan, right, Michael?
Hopefully, God willing.
Well, I think he's on. We're going to record hopefully next Friday. And Eddie is a developer, a multimedia developer for the My Teaching Partner Math Science project that we talked about briefly last show. Mm-hmm. And it may be worth bringing a little bit of this back to the table each time we reconvene to think a little bit about where a given tool fits on that.
Well, that's a thought.
I don't necessarily mean we need to pound people over the head with it, but
pull out your TPCK diagram, please.
If you'll refer to diagram 3, which both of you have tattooed on your forearm. Actually, that'd be an awesome tattoo.
Yeah, it would. Yeah. Right on your bicep, right on the gun, you know?
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah. That's the biggest TPCK I've ever seen. And at risk of losing our iTunes clean tag, I suppose we should now say adieu to one another. This has been Gen Tech. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And
for being here.
Talk to you next time.
Bye.